Hunt, hunt.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Sure, hoping we will see Jason Wilde a little bit later today as we are here at the Bog in Saukville for the 2024 Delzer ESPN Milwaukee Open. Jason, can you fulfill that for me? Will you be out here at the golf outing?
Well, what's it worth to you?
Now that is a smart man. That is a man who recognized that maybe there's a little quid pro quo that could happen here. Maybe this could become transactional. I guess we'll have to think about it. Is there anything you'd like to request in exchange for your presence?
First of all, it's worth nothing to you. So that was the correct answer. Secondly, I will be there. I'm on my way there now. My ETA is 8:14, so I look forward to seeing you in person. Did I ever tell you that Delzer, the guys at Delzer are great, right? They've been great partners for a really long time. But they created the best gift I have ever given Paula.
No, Jason, I don't think you've ever told us this story.
Continue, please.
Okay, so, and there aren't many things that I brag about, but I am a elite level gift giver. In fact, I've got Tausch's birthday present with me right now that I need to deliver at the Delzer ESPN Milwaukee Open. But a few years ago, Paula grew up in Sheboygan. Her family situation was suboptimal, but she's a remarkable story of someone who, instead of making excuses about what she dealt with growing up, and using it as a crutch, she basically said, I'm going to rise above this. And so when, from a very young age, she just grew up really quickly, which is a good thing because she married a child. when she was probably 9, 10, 11, she was an elite-level gymnast, but she got into coaching at a really young age. And what she would do was she had kids in the neighborhood who wanted to learn how to do gymnastics. So she kind of converted her parents' garage into her own little gymnastics academy. And she called it Jimkins Gymnastics. Don't know the story behind the name. She never really explained why she called it that. And she took like sidewalk chalk and on the concrete walls of the garage made her own, like, sign for the gym. And a few years ago, her father passed away, and we had to deal with the just terrible, terrible conditions of her childhood home. But I went in the garage, and the chalk that said Jimkins Gymnastics was still on the concrete walls. And I took a picture of it, and I took it to Delzer, and I said, hey, is there any way you can take this and turn it into, like, a poster board sign for our basement? Because she obviously coaches our girls, who are pretty darn good gymnasts themselves. And they made the most amazing, like, it looks like we have that section of the concrete walls and took it and just transferred it to our basement. It is one of the coolest things anyone has ever done for me. And so those guys have obviously been great partners for a long time, but they will always have an incredibly special place in my heart that they were able to pull that off. Now, whether or not Paula was as emotional and touched by the gift as I was hoping is another story for another day, but I think down deep inside, she thought it was pretty great.
Jason, as your off season is coming to an end, what's your mindset? Is it excitement? Is it like, oh, this is get ready for the grind here? Where's your head at?
Well, it is the same every year. It is that kind of mixed emotion of kind of excited about the new season. Like I talked about last year, how going into camp, like it was the most fascinated and intrigued and uncertain that I'd ever been. So my interest level or my intrigue is still high, but not quite as high as it was last year, because I think I have a better idea of what this team is going to be. At the same time, you know, obviously I really love the off season and the time I get to spend with the girls, but this is different, man. I will never use the word the grind again. I was saying this, I don't know who I was saying this to yesterday, but my first training camp was 97. I started on the beat midway through that 96 season when you guys won the Super Bowl. And that first training camp, you guys had 51 practices open to the public. 51. The first 4 days were pads in the morning and pads in the afternoon. 8:50 and 2:45. And then we finally got to the fifth day, and it was pads in the morning and a special teams practice in the afternoon. This year we've got 16 open practices. Now there's that big chunk in between the early, like ton of early practices that are open to the fans. And then there's like the Baltimore joint practice, and then that's it. There's a bunch of practices in the middle that are open to the media, but not fans. But it is, for me to call it a grind would be completely disingenuous. It's a lot more work than I've been doing the last couple months, but it is nothing close to what you guys endured back in the old days.
Jason, we're obviously all, everybody's, I think, fans hyped for what the Packers can potentially do this season. But with all the lists that come out at ESPN.com and they release the off-ball linebackers today, do they have enough blue-chip talent on the top part of this roster to actually do what we're talking about them doing and being a contender for the Super Bowl?
So I think they do. What I don't think they have is the kind of depth that would allow them to survive and thrive if they lost certain players. And I think you can argue that most teams are like that, right? Like in 2024, no one has the kind of talent stockpiled where if you lose too many critical pieces, you can still be competitive. Like, we always talk about that 2010 team and how they won in spite of all the injuries they had. But let's be honest, like when Nick Barnett went down, and Nick Barnett was a very good player for them, like you kind of knew Desmond Bishop was a good player, right? And when they lost Jermichael Finley, that was a catastrophic loss. I mean, he's one of those what could have been. Even though Chewy called him a moron on the radio, and then I had to deal with that in the locker room, you know, he was a special talent. And when he got hurt, they did have to kind of figure things out. But they had Jordy emerging. They had Jennings. They had Jones. They had Driver. Like, the fact that Andrew Corliss wasn't as good as Jermichael Finley didn't devastate their playoff chances, right? And they got hot at the right time, they go win the Super Bowl. But, like, I don't know, you talk about linebackers, like, I still don't know how good Quay Walker is, and I have no idea how good Edgerrin Cooper or Tyron Hopper will be if they start. I am a big Isaiah McDuffie guy, but again, for what, and I don't even have a great understanding of exactly what Halfley wants from these guys. Like, I don't know if Isaiah McDuffie is like that third linebacker who only plays 15% of the snaps, or if he's a guy that's going to be on the field more than that. Like, there's so much about this defense. I mean, so much of our time in the offseason was spent watching them run the defense at like half speed or three-quarter speed that I don't think I'm a complete, to use Chewy's word, moron when it comes to understanding defenses. But I don't have a great grasp of what this is supposed to look like yet. So whether or not, you know, they have enough defensive line talent interior-wise besides Clark, whether their edge rushers are going to be as good with their hand in the ground as they were in a 3-4, what they're doing at linebacker, how good the second safety is going to be, and quite frankly, how good Xavier McKinney is, because it would appear based on Jeremy Fowler's pieces that the league opinion of him, much like the league opinion of Jordan Love, is that, yeah, he's pretty good, but we're not so sure just how good he is. So that's a really good question, Gabe, and I don't have a really good answer for it at this point.
Jason Wilde hanging out with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. He is en route to this morning's ESPN Milwaukee golf outing at the Bog in Saukville. Jason, our friend and colleague John Anderson, I feel like we are so lucky to have him, longtime ESPN anchor. He came on the air recently and was talking about that the Packers not only believe in Jordan Love, but they also trust him. Let's take a listen to John Anderson and what he had to say about Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers recently.
He's going to get a good contract, and I want to say this. I don't care if they give him $100 million. I'm not going to say they overpaid, because I know believe in him and are willing, if they have to overpay, they will overpay because they believe in him as a quarterback and a person. And if they have to take a risk and it's too much, I think they'll gladly take it.
So I think, and maybe this is nuance and semantics, I think before they believed in him, or they would not have turned it around, turned it over to him. I think now they trust him, which is, I think, maybe
that's huge.
A different deal.
Yes.
Like before, we believed he was the guy.
Yeah.
Now I think the franchise is entrusted to him.
Jason, that, of course, from the Homer Hour with Steve the Homer True. Do you agree with John that it is not just them believing in Jordan Love, but that they trust him to be able to get this team where they want it to go?
Yeah, I couldn't tell what show that was from that crazy guy that was yelling at the start of the segment. All right, so I think it's more nuanced than that, and I think there's a couple of things after I listen to that I would hit on. First of all, you know, I would disagree to some level. I don't think they believed in him wholeheartedly when they turned it over to him. I think they were just really sick and tired of dealing with Rodgers, and it was time to you-know-what or get off the pot with Jordan Love. And they thought he had improved a ton, but they really didn't know. If they believed in him, they would have given him the fifth-year option in May of 2023, and they didn't. So that's one. Two, I do think they believe in him now and trust in him. But I also think that it is their job. It is an imperative that they protect themselves in case they're wrong. In case the Jordan Love 10-game performance is an aberration. Now, do I believe it is an aberration? I don't. Does Goody think it's an aberration? He doesn't. I do think we have lost sight of the fact that he did not play particularly well in the Giants game, that they lost to Tommy DeVito. So I say this as a Jordan Love convert and a Jordan Love believer, that it is still their duty to make sure that they structure this contract that if they have been hoodwinked by him, that they are going to be able to get out of it and find somebody else. Again, I don't think they will have to do that. So I think there are limits to their belief and trust in him. Now, to John's point, you know, they also are now trusting him to give him more freedom at the line of scrimmage. How he handles that and how effective he is in using that will be another one of the storylines of this season. But it is their job. And look, the Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, let's be honest, they aren't 100% all in convinced that Trevor Lawrence is as good as they want him to be, because he got appreciably less guaranteed money than Jared Goff did, right? 170 versus 142. That I do think that the Packers take that seriously. And I, the words that keep ringing in my ears are Goody saying, before the fifth-year option decision had to be made, that's a lot of money to give a guy who hasn't played. Now, he has obviously played, but I think somewhere, and I don't know if Goody would say this publicly, I think he said kind of a variation of it, but I don't think he's going to come out and say, this is a lot of money to give a guy who had a half of a good season. Because when they were 2-5, and Jordan Love had completed 57% of his passes, and they're trading Rasul Douglas, I don't think that they had the belief in him that they have now. And it is well placed, but they still have to protect themselves and the franchise.
Jason, do you have any update on Kraft or Tom? When they're going to be available, or
is yeah, hush, good hush? Question. So I have never torn a pec because there's no way I'm putting up excessive weight on the bench. It sounds to me like they put a very happy face on the diagnoses when we talked to them, but if that turns out to be accurate, Kraft tore his pec a couple of weeks later than Tom did, so his timeline is behind. The last we talked to Tom, he said he thought he would be in position to be cleared for the first practice. Do I believe they will clear him? I do not. I think they will take it slow with him. They've got enough guys they want to take a look at. They have enough of an idea of how good he is that they don't need to rush him. Kraft said he thought he'd be cleared a week or two into camp, which I'm going to add a week or two to that diagnosis and expect him to be cleared week three, week four of camp. So, again, I haven't talked to either of those guys yet. We'll see if I get to talk to them next Monday. But I would be stunned if – I would definitely be stunned if Kraft was practicing, and I would be surprised if Tom is on Monday.
Jason, we look forward to seeing you in about an hour out here at the Bog in Sockville for the Delzer ESPN Milwaukee Open. Safe travel, sir.
I see dark clouds in front of me. How's the weather down there?
It's luck.
Gorgeous.
I mean, there's blue a couple skies. Clouds, yeah, but mostly blue skies, bud.
All right, well, I'll have to get past this then. All right, guys, we'll see you soon. Take care. Be good.
I say that about things my husband does all the time. Well,
just got to get past it.
You have to get past this, I guess. We roll on here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy right after this.